Please join me in welcoming Dr. John Urbanchuk.
Thank you, Bob. Have fun.
I will.
And I'm a Bob Dineen look-alike without the beard. An economist of substance, if you will. I'm delighted to be here with you today to talk about an issue that we heard something about this morning, and I don't know how you all feel, but people tend to badmouth Congress. But what we saw this morning are probably two of the very best Congress has to offer, and we should be very, very thankful and proud that we have them working for us. But one of the issues that always comes to fore when critics of the ethanol industry, and yes, we have critics out there, some, as Bob indicated earlier, from within agriculture, but typically what they'll come up and say is, why in the hell do you guys need a subsidy? Well, what I'm here to do is to tell you a little bit about the ethanol tax incentives at the federal level, and I'm going to focus on the VTEC, and why we need it, how it's important, what it means to us, and what it provides. And I think that message is very, very important to get out. Well, history of the federal tax incentives for ethanol goes back to the Energy Tax Act of 1978, started off at 40 cents a gallon for 100% neat ethanol, increased to 60 cents in 1984, and since then it's been on the downturn. It's currently 51 cents that took effect in 2005. The VTEC, as we know it, it expires in 2010, and we're going to have to work to get that reauthorized. The volumetric ethanol excise tax credit replaces that partial excise tax credit, the exemption that we had before, and really has some important characteristics. Perhaps the most important one of these is the fact that since it's no longer an exemption, you know, the blender who buys the motor fuel pays the excise tax, which goes to the Highway Trust Fund, and the VTEC is paid out of the general fund. And that becomes very, very important because that's where one of the primary benefits of the excise tax credit come from as we move forward. Did that wrong? I think it's important for you to remember that despite the fact that this industry has grown significantly, and it has grown tremendously, the industry is still an infant. And economic theory tells us that a new national industry should be able to gain a substantial market share within the domestic market before that subsidies that support it are abolished. We call that the infant industry argument, if you will. And again, keep in mind that you've got to look at this in the context of where we compete. Ethanol is sold as a motor fuel primarily, with the exception of what we enjoyed at the reception last night. Primarily, it's a motor fuel industry. And the modern ethanol industry dates back to, it's been around for a long time. I'm not sure if it's the first or the second of the largest, the oldest professions. We typically think of the first oldest profession, but when you think about it, it probably took a few drinks to get that started. So, you make your decision. But the modern ethanol industry dates back to the oil crisis of the mid-1970s and the early 1980s. The Arab oil embargo, and it made it quite clear that we had a problem with fuel, with petroleum, with oil, and we needed an alternative. And it got further spurred along by the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. By comparison, the petroleum industry is well over 100 years old, okay? The other thing is relative size. That 4.9 billion gallons of ethanol we produced last year only represents about 4% of the total motor fuel use in the United States. So when you look at it in terms of context, we are, in fact, still an infant industry. Petroleum industry is mature. I'm a Pennsylvanian, proud of the fact that the first commercial oil well was drilled in Titusville back in 1859. However, the modern oil industry dates back to the turn of the 20th century, about 1901, with the discovery of Spindletop in Texas. But it's well over 100 years old. And by the way, they get subsidies too. When you add these up, you're talking about $20 billion that we can easily identify as subsidies that go to the oil industry. So, you know, these people are throwing rocks at a glass house, and they ought to think about that. It's important to keep in mind that these tax incentives reduce the risk associated with investment. Typically, a firm will invest in a risky, non-traditional activity, and we are, okay? It's risky. It's relatively non-traditional. But they'll do that only with the assurance that their revenues won't be threatened by either foreign or domestic competition. And the excise tax, the federal tax incentive provides that risk assurance. The continued existence of the VTEC is an effective risk-reducing instrument for the financial community and for investors, and will help stimulate further demand in the ethanol industry. The current system we have works. It's played an integral role in supporting the development of this industry and will continue to do that. And very, very importantly, this tax incentive is very, very small price to pay for that long-term goal of energy security we heard yesterday about and we all know about. When you look at it, that 4.9 billion gallons of ethanol displaces about 206 million barrels of crude oil. At today's prices, that's a little over $11 billion. And that's money that stays here in this country. It still gets spent, but it gets spent here. It goes back into the economy, and it generates activity. And that's important. It doesn't go abroad. And as Bob talked about yesterday, this industry generates economic activity, creates GDP, generates household income, supports new jobs that all pay taxes. So when you take a look at the total tax contribution, and this is where it comes back to that issue of the general revenue, the general fund is important, is that when you look at the total contribution of the ethanol industry and what it means for the economy, it generates about $2.7 billion in total revenue, tax revenue, at the federal level last year. By comparison, the VTEC probably cost a little less than $2.4 billion, assuming that we blended every gallon of that ethanol that was produced last year. That means there's a net surplus in tax revenue at the federal level of over $210 billion, which is you know, a positive number, and that's the key point. At the same time, the ethanol industry generates about $2.2 billion for state and local governments as well, which help offset some of those incentives as well. So what you're looking at is you're looking at an incentive that generates demand, supports demand, reduces risk and incents investment, and is important for the economics of the industry. Because really, this tax incentive helps maintain the competitiveness of ethanol in that motor fuel market. We all know that ethanol is sold as both an octane enhancer and as a blending component used to meet air quality requirements. Now, the way that the world has changed, petroleum refiners have other octane enhancers available to them. They also have, with the removal of the oxygenate requirement, the ability to make a gasoline that can meet clean air requirements without adding an oxygenate to it. They just haven't done it, and it's questionable about whether they can, and if they can they do it in the quantities that are necessary? Therefore, it's important to keep that market open for ethanol. But ethanol now has to compete on the basis of economics, and that's an important consideration, because ethanol historically is more expensive than gasoline. What I've got up here is I've got the Chicago spot market price for ethanol. I've got the price of regular gasoline at the Gulf. You can probably add a couple of cents. You heard Bob Reynolds talk about transportation costs. To get it up, there's probably a couple of cents a gallon. But you see the spread there in the green. And ethanol typically has been more expensive than gasoline is. Well, the VTEC protects ethanol producers from declines in oil and gasoline prices over which they have no control. Because importantly, the price of ethanol is not determined by the price of corn. The cost of making ethanol is, but not the price at which it sells. That's determined by the price of oil and gasoline. And ethanol producers have no control over that. And we've done some analysis that indicates that for every 10% increase in gasoline prices, ethanol prices increase 4.6%. And at the same time, for every 10% increase in supply of ethanol, prices only fall 1.4%. So you can see that the impact on the petroleum side is far more important. Ethanol producers are price takers, not price makers. And that's an important consideration. And that's why it's important to keep that competitive advantage there. There are relatively little in the way of economies of scale in ethanol production. We're not talking about rocket science here. There are some economies of scale that you get as the industry gets bigger. Obviously, as the plant gets bigger, you can save in labor costs. But frankly, with two-thirds of the cost of ethanol involved in the feedstock, that means a third of it, and by the way, another 18 to 20% is energy. That doesn't leave a lot of room for all the other things. So those other things can increase a lot, and it's still not going to have that much of an impact. All right? We've seen the increases in corn prices, and that has hurt. That has affected profitability. Natural gas prices are still relatively high. So, you know, we have a situation where ethanol is more expensive to make than gasoline. And it becomes particularly important in an environment where oil and gas prices are falling and feedstock prices are going up because margins are being pressured. And that's what this chart shows. The green in the back is the average price of corn at the farm by month from June of 2003 to December of 2006. The red line is the spot price of ethanol. The blue line is the price of regular gasoline. You can see that ethanol and gasoline prices are going down and corn prices are going up. Now, we've been here before. We saw this happen in 1980. We saw it happen again in 1982. We saw it happen again in 1995 and 1996. And prices are going up again. We've been in this squeeze before. Most of us have survived, and we will survive again. Ethanol, in terms of corn, is going to account for a larger share of corn utilization. By 2012, we're looking at over 30%, about 33%, and it'll drop slightly as cellulose kicks in, but it's going to be an important component of corn, okay? And from a corn farmer's perspective, this is a very vital and important consideration because a corn farmer is getting value out of this product. We expect corn production is going to slowly, it's going to increase, stocks are going to rebuild, and corn prices will retreat from their high levels now. But we're looking at an environment where historically corn prices are going to be higher than they have been in the past. And again, it's important to maintain that competitiveness. There's another factor, too, and that's the structure of this industry has changed pretty dramatically over the last 15 or so years. The new investment that you've all been involved with has resulted in plants that are both larger and more efficient. Process automation and distributed control systems have reduced labor requirements. The work that the guys at Roger Conway and Hossein Shapouri and the USDA have done looking at cost of production have documented this very, very well. And this investment in technology largely has been, I think, due to the assurance, if you will, that the federal tax incentives for ethanol that make ethanol cost competitive with gasoline will remain in place. And we know that's going to be the factor. We strongly think it's going to be the factor through 2010. And afterwards, as we continue to require the need to increase investment. And this is a graphic consideration of how that VTEC has kept ethanol competitive with gasoline. What this does is it shows the price of regular gasoline, as we indicated earlier, and the net ethanol price. And that is the net ethanol price, that is the spot price of ethanol, less the 51 cents a gallon. And as you can see between the two of those, there are relatively few periods where there has been a deviation from that. And there have been deviations on both sides, downside and upside. But the point of the matter is that volumetric ethanol excise tax credit provides a significant push to maintaining the competitiveness of ethanol in the marketplace. And without that, it's going to be very difficult, I think, to continue to get the kinds of increases in the demand for ethanol that we've seen and that we expect to see over the next 10 or 15 years. And clearly, I think it will be very difficult to meet the administration's targets with regard to renewable fuel use without having that incentive in place. So in conclusion, the federal tax incentive for ethanol works. And if something works, don't try and fix it. It maintains ethanol's competitiveness with gasoline, and it keeps that market open. It helps sustain investment in a risky industry, and ladies and gentlemen, this is a risky industry. The ethanol industry creates significant economic growth, and it more than pays for itself. Now, I will admit that I'm looking at this in a dynamic sense, okay? And my friends at the CBO tend to look at this in a static sense. And I think it's very important for all of us to work very, very diligently to make sure that your elected representatives in Washington understand that you as an industry are making the economy bigger You're making it stronger, you're making it more viable, and you're making it more secure. And by the way, you're putting money into the treasury. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. And finally, from that national security perspective, this tax incentive is a very small price to pay for that long-term goal of energy security. And a last point with regard to that, 5 billion gallons, even 15 billion gallons, or even 30 billion gallons of ethanol. In the context of all the oil and gasoline that we consume in the United States, we consume about 140 billion gallons of motor fuel of gasoline. Okay? That's an awful lot. So we have a long way to grow, and we are making a very, very significant and positive contribution to that. And that's what I want you to take away from this. And when you talk to people in the livestock industry, or you talk to people who are in other industries that say, why do we need an incentive? Why are you trying to keep the price of my product high, or my raw material, my input high? I want you to think about it in the context of what that incentive means in terms of creating demand, in terms of reducing risk and incenting investment, and moving toward a larger, stronger, more viable economy and energy security. And if you can communicate that message, I think you'll go a long way to helping convert some of those skeptics and critics of this industry. And with that, I thank you very much. And I think I've actually finished on time. That may be a first, Bob.